Beloved listeners, happy Saturday. This is your host, Kenneth Lesser, welcoming you to another fun adventure in Advanced Living Radio. And you know we're here to make your life better. Daily I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to naturally, easily experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives. Why? So we can enjoy a global loving community. And we are so blessed coming into this new year. Perfect, perfect timing. The guest that was scheduled had something come up, and we have been so blessed to continue a theme. Coming into this year, we want to get our bodies in shape again. We make New Year's revolutions and resolutions, and oh my gosh, just put it forward, and then something happens to most of us along the way called some form of forgetfulness, and the next thing we know, some of that success has slipped by us. Well, no more. 2008, folks, we are changing course, changing direction, and going to succeed because we have wonderful people like our guest today, John M. Rowley. And what he is doing is amazing, amazing. His rise to the top is really nothing short of phenomenal. It's the stuff of legend and inspiration. He was a college athlete, but his career was cut short by a near-fatal car accident. And a number of twists and turns in his life where there was times where he was on the verge of bankruptcy, times where his family, they didn't have food to eat, didn't have money to pay bills, and yet he persisted. And he was willing to do what it took. He took on a career as a janitor, not a job, a career. He basically comes from this kind of energy of putting himself into whatever he's doing. And that career of a janitor led to other things, and he ended up basically getting into the high-powered world of Manhattan real estate, also the dynamic international field of fitness. So this is a well-studied man in the field of kinesiology, exercise, anatomy, fitness, nutrition, and he took on that with an intensity. That's one of the gifts that he has to help us to reconnect with, is that passion and intensity within us. And of course, one of the things he had going for himself was being a conditioned athlete and being coached to do that. Now we're going to be finding out some of the importance of how to do these things. And he's written a wonderful book about climb your ladder of success without running out of gas. Now, I'm going to be talking to him later because I like that title of the book, and it looks like it's just a fascinating book from what I'm seeing. And I thought, climb your ladder of success without getting rung, R-U-N-G, rung out. That's another story. We don't want to get too far afoot here. What I do want to do is bring John on so that we can get started and have our phone lines open. Some of you may have some questions, fitness questions, motivation questions, getting your business going, because this man has just basically done it all. Now, our phone lines in the U.S., 877-876-5227, in Canada, 888-815-9756. For those out of those areas, 530-876-3222. John, welcome.
Ken, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to be on your show. I appreciate it.
Oh, this is just exciting, exciting. Now, I got to kind of turn you loose here a little bit, because you brought yourself from a near-fatal car accident, a career as a janitor, one of the youngest senior vice presidents in a Manhattan real estate firm, owner of the gym that was in the movie Pumping Iron, which starred Arnold Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno, that film was filmed in that gym. And you have done an amazing transformation in your life. And, of course, what you're here to tell us is, or at least I'm hoping, was it just luck, or can we do this?
Well, let me start off by telling you, most of it was done out of desperation, not inspiration.
Ah!
Basically, when I was 18 years old, I was going to college in Kansas. I'm originally from New York, and was training very, very hard. My goal was the 1980 Olympics. Whether or not I achieved that or not was another story. But the summer between my freshman and sophomore year, I was training very hard. I was getting ready to go back to college out in Kansas. I was living in New York with my parents. And I ended up falling asleep behind the wheel. And I ended up falling asleep and gunning the car. And they said that I probably was asleep with my eyes open.
Mm.
I ended up hitting head-on into an oak tree with my car on the driver's side at about 90 miles an hour. My right arm was shattered. My left leg was shattered. Every rib was broken. My breastbone was broken and split in half by about 3 inches. And my nose was cut off my face. And in the ambulance, on the way to the hospital, I recognized the paramedic working there. He went to high school with me. And I looked up at him. I said, Tommy, I said, how bad is my nose? He just started crying, and he goes, Johnny, if you're here in the morning, worry about your nose. That's how bad it was.
Mm.
So when I had a little car accident, it was pretty bad. So what happened was, my dad was a custodian engineer for New York City, and so was my grandfather. That was the career I knew. So my father thought, instead of me sitting home and, licking my wounds, once I was able to walk on a walker, I was able to use one leg and one arm. He got me a job in an evening in a New York City school, basically sweeping classrooms. And the Irish custodian engineer who ran the school told me, he goes, kid, I don't know how you do it. He goes, you outwork everybody with one arm and one leg. So that was my start. But what I did was I outworked everybody so I could get to the school library, so I could read Zig Ziglar books, so I could read Anthony Robbins books, Jack Canfield books, Norman Vincent Peale books, any books I could get my hand on. And then once I started making a little bit of money, I started listening to CDs. And my goal, after about a year doing that, was to get into New York real estate. Everybody told me I was foolish. They said, you can't do it. In fact, I started interviewing, and people told me, come back when you're in your 40s.
Huh?
Go start in Brooklyn, go start in Queens, and I wasn't going to accept that. So I finally got an interview with somebody, and the guy wasn't going to hire me. And I said, listen, I said, I got one question for you. I am not going to give up. And if you don't hire me right now, I'm going to go across the street and sit on somebody else's doorstep until they hire me. My question to you is, do you want me competing against you? So I got into New York real estate in my 20s, which is unheard of.
Wow.
And started managing some Park Avenue properties, basically all properties that were, mismanaged and nobody really could handle. And my premier property was 7 Park Avenue. Harry and Leona Helmsley happened to be the sponsor of that building, which means they turned it from a rental building into a co-op. I managed that building so well that I made a really good name for myself in New York real estate. And got to, meet people like Barbara Corcoran, who was a famous author now, but she owned the largest real estate company in New York City. And your question, was it a fluke or was it luck? No, it wasn't luck. I had so many failures, it was unbelievable. In fact, my first day at work, I was asked to start at work the night before my first day at work. They wanted me to go to a meeting at 7 Park Avenue for the board of directors, and then the next morning come to work and start my day and get to know everybody. But they wanted me there because the next meeting wasn't going to be for a whole month. So I get to work, and Mark Hansen goes, he goes, going in, he goes, you don't have to do anything. I know you don't know this business yet. Just take the minutes. I'm thinking to myself, minutes, that's great. Okay, easy. This is really easy. Next day I go to work. Mr. Harris is walking into my Madison Avenue office, shouts across the office, and everybody's watching because I'm brand new and I'm such a young kid. He goes, Johnny, he goes, did you do the minutes last night? Now, Ken, keep in mind, the minutes are the corporate records of the corporation. They're very, very important for resales of apartments on these Park Avenue apartments, financing of the building, everything. And I said, sure, Mr. Harris. He goes, can you have them on my desk in an hour? I said, I could do one better than that. It was 198 minutes. Ken, I timed the meeting. I didn't know anything.
Wow.
So if any of your listeners are wondering, can they do what I did? Absolutely. I didn't even know. I was timing minutes. I was an athlete. I was like, hey, this is easy. Sure, he wants me to time the minute. I knew nothing.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Basically, I got my foot in the door, and I just worked hard. I learned everything I needed to do. I bribed one of the cleaning ladies to get me the key to all the executive offices so I could go in the very next morning, very early in the morning, and go into everybody's office and make copies of all their minutes so I could find out how to do minutes, how to write a letter, how to do all these things. So I worked hard. I used my energy in order to succeed, but I was also very focused on what I did. And when I had a failure, I didn't let it bother me.
Mm. That's huge, because most people, when something goes wrong, oftentimes it just confirms that they're a failure, they're not going to make it, and then they just kind of get a bad attitude and give up.
I agree. That's one of the benefits of being an athlete. I was a runner, and I wasn't a very good athlete as a kid. And then when I started running, my very first track meet, I was actually just watching a buddy of mine run. And I had a lacrosse stick in my hand and kind of just watching my friends run. And the track coach, Mr. Sweeney, comes up to me. He goes, John, I want you to run the 440, which is a quarter of a mile, one lap around the track. And I said, I don't want to run. I'm wearing work boots. I'm wearing jeans and a shirt. I'm not dressed for this. He goes, we need you to run. And this guy was such a nice guy. He's a friend of my dad's.
Yeah.
So I get on the starting line, gets me over there. I get in the starting line. I said, what do I do? He goes, just try to stay with everybody until you get over there. And he points halfway across the football field, halfway across the track. When you get to that sewer cap, I want you to take off. I said, okay, that's easy. So I'm jogging. I'm kind of towards the back of the pack, a little bored. Get about 100 yards into it, 100 yards into it, about halfway through the turn. I'm like, let me catch up to the front guy and see what's going on. So I run up to the front guy, and I'm running along with him, and I'm thinking this is kind of like the trotters. I've been to trotters at Roosevelt Raceway where the horses run behind the car, and then the gate opens.
Yeah.
And then the race begins. I thought the race began at the sewer cap.
Ah.
So I get to the sewer cap, and I take off. And I ended up breaking their record. My coach told me, he goes, when you took off, he goes, you saw nothing but dust, because it was a old dirt track. And I said, well, yeah. He said, how come nobody ran with me? He goes, well, the race started when the gun went off. Well, I didn't start running until I got halfway through the track. That was how my track career started. And I was a good runner, and I did well, and I worked hard. But as an athlete, you learn to overcome failure. If every time you lost a race or every time you got hurt or something like that, you'd never succeed in life. And I just took that into the business world. It was the only experience I had.
Mm. Wow. So there's an important thing for fathers and mothers with thinking about what to do with their kids, about getting them into athletics.
Absolutely. And even if it's not athletics, most of my kids didn't get into sports. But one thing I tried, in fact, I had a conversation with my 24-year-old today, and I was telling him, I said, God gives you so many gifts. He gives you millions of dollars worth of gifts, and in his case, he's very bright. But if you don't use them, those gifts are worthless. It's like somebody giving you $100 and you put it under a stone. It has no value until you go to spend it. If you're not utilizing the gifts that you're given, they're worthless. It doesn't make any difference if how smart you are. I competed against guys in New York real estate that graduated from Harvard, Wharton, and Yale, and I had no college degree. Yet I excelled when they didn't. As a matter of fact, I excelled when many of them failed because they didn't use what they had. They had so much more than me. They just didn't use it to the degree that I was willing to use my gifts.
Well, there's a there's an amazing example. You'd mentioned, I believe, Tony Robbins.
Oh yeah, he's incredible.
And Richard Bandler, John Grinder, who developed neurolinguistic programming, and you know, and know nuances of it that are just, I mean, mind-boggling. And Tony came along, studied a little bit, didn't know it in depth, but was amazed by what he saw, and he was so dynamic in his fervor. I mean, he was, living in a Volkswagen Beetle for a period.
Yes, he was.
You know, so, and what did he do? He got motivated, and he took little snippets that were significant, and yet he built this whole international empire, and other people, Grinder and Bandler, haven't come anywhere near touching the number of lives that he has.
That's exactly right, because he did something with what he had.
Yeah.
He took action, which is one of the things Tony teaches. You know, I listened to Tony. One of the first CDs tapes I grew up, my first stuff was Anthony Robbins, not Anthony Robbins, Zig Ziglar. But as I started getting a little more sophisticated, you know, when Tony's stuff came out right then in the early 80s, I used to walk to the subway. This is before we owned the car. I had to walk about 3.5-4 miles to a subway station to get my, you know, to get into New York City for my job. So I would walk rain or shine, and my goal was to listen to at least one CD a day and implement it. And, you know, many days I'd listen to 3 or 4 CDs if traveling was slow. But it doesn't, you know, the funny thing is I would see people all the time in my office listening to Anthony Robbins CDs or other stuff. And they would never go anywhere because they would listen to it and they didn't have the energy to implement it. They were exhausted by 10 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And these same people that were exhausted, you know, they would be eating donuts and stuff at the coffee cart at 10 o'clock when I was drinking a protein drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember going one time, we were all walking over to the Javits Center, a whole bunch of real estate people. Zig Ziglar was speaking and Tom Hopkins, who was a tremendous sales trainer, was speaking. These two great men were speaking. And we were walking over there, and, you know, we're not even halfway there yet, and everybody's tired already. I'm excited to get there. And they're like, we can't wait to do this. I said, you know what, guys? I said, you're going to listen to this. You're going to get excited. You're going to go back to the office, and you'll do something with it for a day or two. But unless you keep yourself physically fit, mentally aware, and motivated, you're going to run out of gas before you can be successful with anything that they teach you.
Yeah.
And that was true, because most of these people, you know, they'd get 2 or 3 days into it and do nothing with it.
Mm.
It all works together. Body, mind, spirit. You got to be complete. You got to be completely whole. And you know this, but you need to be completely whole. I'm preaching to the choir now. You need to be completely whole in order to be fully successful. Because, you know, most people, they're at home. And they didn't do what they were supposed to do at work. So while they're with their family, they're not giving themselves wholly to their family because they're worrying about what they did at work. Then when they get to work, they're not paying attention to what they're doing at work because they weren't paying attention to their family. You know, they know their family is upset with them. What things aren't right at home. So what happens, they're never in the moment because they didn't take care of what they were supposed to take care of when they were supposed to take care of it.
Mm. Yeah. Who was it? Was it Zig that originated the statement, Zig Ziglar, people don't plan to fail, they fail to plan?
They fail to plan. And he also said, if you do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it, you'll be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it.
Ah.
And that's important. Being whole, you know, it's like the person. I know plenty of bodybuilders. When I was involved with bodybuilding, I would go to the Mr. Olympia show. In fact, I expedited many of the Mr. Olympia shows. I would be backstage orchestrating what goes on behind the scenes. And many of these people, you know, they were physically, you know, incredible specimens, but very unsuccessful in business and very very unsuccessful in their relationships because all they focused on was their physique. And then you have other people where all they focus on is their intellect or, you know, what they're supposed to be doing at work, and then they're physically unfit and unhappy. So, you know, I think, and it doesn't take a whole lot of work, Ken, and you know this, it doesn't take a whole lot of work to be physically fit, to be mentally sound, to be spiritually aware. It doesn't take a whole lot of work, but it takes work every day.
Yes. Yes, because the most of the spiritual teachings that I've looked at have... the different masters, the different leaders, have reminded us to be wary of the temptations of the world, lest we fall off of our path and lose the strength.
Exactly right.
To have a wonderful life.
That's exactly right.
Huh. Now, in your book, I'm guessing some from our conversation, you know, you've looked into a lot of books, but could you share a little bit your book, and we should give your website out. Also, would you do that for us, please?
Sure. It's www.johnmrowley, J-O-H-N, M as in Michael, Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y.com. In fact, we're doing a huge promotion for our book on Tuesday. I've got everybody from Joe Vitale, you know, Stephen Pierce, you know, all these incredible experts in their field. I've got about 82 of them helping, and we're doing a real large promotion for the book. We're hoping to hit the bestsellers list next week.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Excellent. Leveraging with some high-profile people.
That's what it's networking and being friends with people and being around like-minded people. And that's another lesson. Just being around people who want to achieve what you want to achieve. They'll pull you through to success. You know, I when I'm in a gym, I want to hang around with the guys who are in really good shape and motivated. When I'm at work, when I'm working, I want to be around the best of the best. In fact, I could have published my book much earlier, but I wanted my book endorsed by some of the best people in the world. In fact, Mark Victor Hansen, the publisher of the best-selling book ever, with the exception of the Bible, The Chicken Soup for the Soul?
Yes.
Mark Victor Hansen wrote the foreword to my book.
Ah.
What an incredible blessing that was.
Yes, yes. I've gotten to meet him on a few different occasions, and it's always inspiring.
He's incredible. He's a high-energy, highly passionate man, regardless of whatever he touches.
Yes, yeah. He puts himself fully into it, and that's, I think, one of the things I'm suspecting that there may be some things in your book about how to help us to connect to that passion that's within us.
And we do. Basically, the book, when I first came up with this concept of the book, I spoke to I spoke to many, many publishers. We were turned down over 300 times. But one very large New York publisher told me, he goes, John, this is either two books, a fitness book and a success book. Well, the genius in the book is you're the first to combine the two. Now, I said genius of the book. He didn't say I was a genius. But I found it very, very strange that this was never combined before. Now, it was combined in certain things. You know, I know Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I read many of his articles growing up, and he would always allude to this, you know, be physically fit and successful, and Jack LaLanne does also. There are many people who allude to it. But this is the first major book that covers these things. Now, the first two-thirds of the book cover success. They cover being mentally sound and spiritually sound. And they go over, you know, a lot of the typical things like goal setting. But even the chapter on goal setting, we cover that from a little bit of a different route. I start off goal setting with having people define what their passions are. Because I feel if you don't know what your passions are, what you're passionate about, that why bother setting goals? Because if you're not passionate about what you're trying to achieve, you're not going to achieve it. And so we go over that. The feedback that I'm getting on my book, and I feel a little funny talking about it because it's my book and I don't want to sound like I'm bragging or anything, but the feedback I'm getting on the book is so many people are telling me that I was so candid with my failures that they find that is what separates this from a lot of the other books, where I don't just go and give advice. I'm giving advice, but I'm also showing how I gained the wisdom to give these advice through failures and also through accomplishments and through learning through many, 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 many people. So we cover all the self-help stuff, and then after we get through that, you know, how to overcome failure, how to set goals, how to keep yourself motivated, and keeping yourself motivated is a trick in itself. You know, a lot of people will say, does motivation work? You know, I've heard this said before, Mark Victor Hansen is like, well, it's like showering. If you don't shower every day, you're going to smell. If you don't keep yourself motivated every day, you're going to stink also. So keeping yourself motivated is a matter of keeping the carrot in front of you at all times and seeing that. So we cover all those things, and then we get into diet and exercise and really simple ways of doing that. People can get an advanced diet and exercise book. And one of the cool things about this book, what we've done with this, is I've read all kinds of exercise, and I'm looking at my library now. I've got 5 bookcases just full of exercise and diet books and everything else. And the one question that I get from people all the time is, I read that book on how to exercise. I don't know how to do any of the exercises. So what we've done is, when people buy the book, they'll be able to go to an online book bonus page associated with my website, and there's 6 videos. One video showing how to do every chest exercise you can think of, then another one back, then another one shoulders, and so forth, for every body part that you have. So I think that will then itself will keep people motivated, knowing that they can change things up. And then I also tell people about, on the exercise end, on different lifestyles of different types of people. Now, I've got friends of mine that exercise 5 and 6 days a week. Then I know a guy who just exercises 1 day a week, and he's in better shape than most people I know, and he's 70 years old.
Wow.
So his name is Clarence Bass. This guy's phenomenal. He exercises 1 day a week with weights, and albeit he works out very hard, but he does it 1 day a week with weights for probably an hour to an hour and a half on Saturday. Then on Wednesday, he does 1 day of very hard cardio. And the only other thing he does is watches what he eats every day. He's got a very good diet. And he goes for a walk with his wife for about an hour every evening. And that's it, and the guy's in great shape. So I want to show people that you don't need to be crazy, you know, working out every day in order to have good results. But you do need to watch what goes in your mouth every day, just like you have to pay attention to what goes in your head. In fact, what goes in your head a lot of times is more important than what goes in your mouth.
Oh.
Because I find with most people is if they get depressed or they hit a roadblock and or they, you know, some kind of a failure with something, everybody defaults back to what their comfort level is. And a lot of people's comfort level is food. You know, some may be alcohol or other things, but a lot of people use food as a drug, and they don't look at it as a drug. You know, they may look down their nose at people who would go out and do cocaine or drink a bottle of rum. But to sit down and eat a box full of donuts affects your metabolism and your brain equally as much as the other drugs do. It's just that they're legal drugs. And that's why we have such an obesity problem on our hands, because a lot of people will use food as a drug. You know, you can sit down in the evening and eat, you know, your starchy carbohydrates, and you'll feel yourself calm right down. And that's what a lot of people are looking for. They're looking for comfort. You know, the term comfort food is kind of overused.
Yeah.
But that's what it does. A lot of times, you know, you eat a few donuts or, you know, mashed potatoes or something. Kind of calms you down, and it does comfort you. So I kind of got off the thing. In the book, we do cover, it's a motivational book. We cover how to keep yourself motivated. We cover how to overcome failures, which, you know, most people, it's funny, in the gym, when I go to the gym, and I owned a gym where Lou Ferrigno worked out and all these high-profile guys worked out, failure was a good thing. You know, people would go to the gym, they want to fail, because when you failed, when your muscles failed, they grew. But the incredible thing is you get out in the real world, and everybody looks at failure as if it's negative. And I don't know about you, I don't know anybody who succeeded on a massive level who also didn't fail on a massive level.
Yep.
Right?
That's what some of the people talk about, is they say the difference between failure and success is the successful people failed more times than the people that gave up.
That's exactly right. You know, the same is true in sports. You know, you look at Babe Ruth, he held the world record for home runs, but he also held the world record for strikeouts.
Yes.
And Fran Tarkington held the pass record. He had more passes than anybody, but he also had more interceptions than anybody. And I had a man one time when I was closing down a business. It was pretty discouraging, and this guy was an intellectual guy, and he was kind of trying to make me feel bad. So I told him, listen, I just got my master's in business, and he goes, yeah, you're too stupid to get your master's in anything. And that's the way a lot of people look at it. They don't, you know, because it wasn't, you didn't learn it. What it is, you failed. You hurt your family and you failed. And the thing is, a lot of people look at that, and it's a misconception. A lot of people, you know, school doesn't teach you that failure is good. In fact, when you get an F in school, you know, it's negative.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I remember sitting in class, in Spanish class in high school one time, and I was cheating off the girl next to me. And the teacher looked at me, he goes, you can't cheat like that. And I said, how come in school, I was a senior in high school, I was a bit of a wise guy. He
yeah.
goes, I said, how come in school is considered cheating and in the business world is considered cooperative learning? Now, I'm not encouraging anybody to cheat in school. We need to learn. But the thing is, a lot of the concepts we learn in school can be detrimental in our real lives. You need to go out and learn from other people. You need to learn from your mistakes, but you need to make mistakes. If you're not trying, you're not failing. And if you're not failing, you're certainly not trying.
Yeah. Wow. Well put. Now, on some of this motivation, is there any couple of hints or tips that you can share? I know I want to, of course, encourage people to go to John M. R-O-W-L-E-Y, Rowley.com, and they can get your book there and also, you know, get access to these videos you were talking about. Can you tantalize us with a hint or two about this keeping ourselves motivated?
Well, absolutely. One of the things I tell people to do, you know, I truly, truly, truly believe that every one of us were born with a seed of passion in us. A seed of greatness, something that was planted in us at birth. And then by the time we get through high school, we're conditioned not to look at that. I really encourage everybody, go in a quiet place, sit down, be still, and remember what your dreams and your passions when you were a kid. And if you go after those dreams and passions, now if you're an executive at IBM and you know you were thinking about being an ice cream man, okay, that might not be who you want to be. But the thing is, every one of us has a passion inside of us. And if we're following our passions, you're going to see great things. You know, you see Danny Thomas, you know, the children's hospital that he built, St. Jude's?
Yes.
That man followed his passions with that. Now, he was a singer, but he had a passion for that. And that was a legacy that lives long beyond him. And if you look at people who are successful, it's usually people who are following their passions. And if you're able to follow your passions and also overcome failure, you're going to be successful. That doesn't mean you quit your job and you follow your passion, but what you do is you follow your passion. You know, some people's passion is to help children. Other people's passion is to help old people. It doesn't make any difference. And being successful doesn't necessarily mean that you're a multimillionaire. Being successful means that you're comfortable and you fulfilled your job on earth. We're all here for a reason. Now, if every one of us wanted that seed of greatness that was inside of us, we'd have more peace in this world. We'd have more happiness in this world. We'd probably have the cure to cancer. We would probably have so much more going on for us as a society because people will be living their passions. People will be living their destinies. They'd be living where they want to live. And
yeah.
we'd all be happier. You know, I always say that energy is the fuel to ignite passion, but passion is the engine of success. You need both. You need to have your passions, but you need to have energy behind your passions.
I know in some of the trainings that I've taken, they talked about that shrinking, that we start off in childhood with some wonderful dreams, and then as we become adults, oftentimes there's this, get real, you know, now you can't have that type of a thing, and all of a sudden our dream circles start shrinking and shrinking and shrinking based on someone's concept of, you know, get real. You know,
exactly.
You can't have that. It's not available. You know, the rich, this, that, or the other concepts that are out there.
Well, the big thing in my life was grow up, John. Grow up. Stop being such a dreamer. Grow up. And I always thought to myself, no, I don't want to. Now, when we first got married, my wife and I have been married for 25 years. This is just to give you an example of following your passions. We've been married for 25 years. I was a janitor when we first got married. Then I went into New York real estate, and I owned a gym, and I've owned other businesses along the way. But when I was a janitor in Brooklyn, I used to get on, I think it was the J train, and I would take the J train all the way into Queens to go to a school called York College. It was the closest college to me. It was an African-American college. I was the only white guy who went there. And I went there because it was the closest college. It was affordable because it was a city school. And I went there and took literature because I wanted to write.
Mm.
That was 25 years ago. I never let that passion die. In fact, when I got into New York real estate, my goal was to retire at 40 and become a speaker and author. I'm 47 now. Things changed because I got out of New York real estate at 35. Now, if you remember in the beginning of the interview, I told you they told me not to come back until I was 40.
Yeah.
I got out at 35. I had a career that was better than most people who retired at 60. But I got out at 35 because my wife and I were looking for a better life for our children and for ourselves, because I was working from, I guess I left my house most mornings between right around 6 o'clock, and I wouldn't get home until 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So we didn't have much of a marriage or much of a life, so we moved down here. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina. We moved to get a better life. But I'm 47 years old. I haven't let that dream die. My book is going out. Now, I didn't go to school and become a literary genius, But I am getting incredible feedback on this book. I've got, I don't know, 8 or 10 pages, maybe 12 pages of endorsements of top Olympians and top business people backing this book. And I've got, I think, about 4 million emails going out on Tuesday to promote this book with about, I would say, probably $7,000 or $8,000 or maybe $10,000 worth of free gifts being put away, given away by all these authors and experts backing me on this because they want to help me get this message out to the world. And I'm so passionate about this. All the funny thing is, all the information in this book, this is stuff I've been telling people for years. Some would listen, most wouldn't. You know, people in my sphere of influence would listen. You know, if I was in New York real estate and somebody wanted to achieve something, 1 out of 10 would listen. But what I did, and I did this every Friday my whole career when I was in New York real estate, I cold-called people in New York real estate that I wanted to get to know. And I would always invite them to coffee on Friday. Now, I shot for coffee because I could afford coffee early in my career. I couldn't afford to bring people to lunch, especially in New York City lunches. You're looking at a few $100. So I would invite people to go to coffee. Very seldom if I got somebody on the phone would they deny me an interview. I would call them up and I'd say, listen, I want to do what you've done. I'm a young guy. I want to learn from you. Can you please meet me for coffee one Friday? And they'd always say, sure. It may take a month before they fit me in their schedule. And, you know, I'm friends with Barbara Corcoran. Barbara Corcoran and I, and I don't know if you know who she is, but she's very famous in the Northeast. And she's on national television every week somewhere. And her and I would meet for breakfast at least once a week. And I would pick her brain. And she had nothing to gain from me. But she saw I was ambitious and wanted to help. And she's got a book out also. But, in fact, the name of the book is If You Don't Have Big Breasts, Put Pigtails in Your Hair. Business lessons she learned from her mom. That's because this gives you the title gives you insight into her personality. She's hysterical. But she's also one of the most successful business people in this world. But learning from other people is so important. Why reinvent the wheel? You know, you can go to my book and learn what I've learned over 30 years. You know, you can listen to your radio show and gain incredible insight from you and your guests. Things that people have taken a lifetime to learn, you can get an hour on your show. It's incredible. Just the amount of information that's available today, there's no reason why anybody should fail. It's incredible.
Mm. Yes. Now, from your part, what I like is you're bringing forth this combination. All the self-help books out there, you've now kind of opened a door that says, here, if you're doing all this self-help stuff and it isn't working to the level that you want it to work, check in. How far are you on your physical fitness level?
Exactly.
And you're, if I'm hearing correctly, you're saying that if that's not at a certain level of well-being, then we can go to all the seminars and read all the books, but we'll basically, as you put here, run out of gas before we can implement that good advice.
Exactly right. You know, I would talk to people and they would go to a Zig Ziglar seminar. Oh, that stuff doesn't work. And then they go to an Anthony Robbins. Ah, that stuff doesn't work. No, you don't work. The information works. You're not implementing it right. You're not implementing it right because you're too tired to implement it. You know, I did a seminar. I was doing a series of seminars down in Atlanta late last year, and they asked me at the last minute to do a time planning seminar.
Okay.
I said, all right. So I stood up in front of a group, and it was a group of military people and college students. And I said, okay, this is how we plan our times. These are different options that you have. And I went just through different ways that you can, you know, time blocking, just different things I've learned over the years. I took about 5 minutes. And I said, okay. And I said, now I got a question for you. How come some people have time to change the world and other people simply do not have time to change their socks? And they all kind of chuckled. And I said, do you agree with that statement? Some people can change the world. You've got, you know, people out there that are changing our world. Then you have other people that just don't have time to do anything. They're busy, 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 and they don't have time to go to the grocery store. You agree with that? And they all laughed and said, yes. And I said, so let's agree, time's not the issue. They said, right, time's not the issue. The issue is utilizing your time properly. And that requires being able to think soundly and have the energy to utilize your time right. And they go hand in hand because your head is not separate from your body. If you notice, you have a neck that attaches it.
Thank God for that.
Yes, thank God for that. And, you know, we don't have a head floating around separate.
Yeah.
So most people think that their brain and their body is two different things. So I might be heavy and out of shape, but my brain is functioning fine. Well, no, you're not. your brain might be functioning better than the person next to you because you're really smart. But if you were physically fit, your brain would be functioning that much more, and you'd be able to utilize so much more because the same blood that runs through your body runs through your brain. And if it's clogged with cholesterol and fat and, you know, all these different things, plus you've got insulin spikes that are screwing both your body and your brain up. If your body's not functioning right, neither is your brain. So you got to take care of, let's look at the spirit for a second, because you've got body, mind, and spirit. Not even getting into a religious conversation. If somebody is out there and somebody is reasonably sound mind, they know they're stealing or murdering somebody. Let's just say stealing, because that's reasonable. They know stealing is wrong. And you've got this person who's working for a company, and he's stealing $500 a week. That man is not going to function right, because after a while, whether you call it your spirit or you call it your conscience, whatever you want to call it, is going to nag at you. And you're not going to sleep right. And this is saying that the person is a reasonable person. Mm-hmm. So if you're not sound in all areas of your life, keeping yourself physically fit, living within your boundaries of what you know is right and wrong, and taking care of your mind, keeping yourself motivated, and also learning in your field of expertise. You know, it's really difficult to be confident at work when you're not studying what you're supposed to be doing. You know, preparing for what you're supposed to do. I know if I'm going to get up in front of a group and I'm prepared, I feel very confident. But if I'm not prepared to discuss what I'm there to discuss, I'm not confident. I don't feel good. And I don't feel like I'm giving my all to the people I'm speaking with. And the same goes for people who are working for other people, or even working for yourself. If you're not preparing yourself and being prepared, you're not ready to give your all. So I really think, you know, all of your successes go hand in hand, body, mind, and spirit. I can't stress that enough. I know that's what your show is about.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Now, one of the things I'll be looking forward to getting your book, actually getting a number of copies that I want to share with some key people in my life so that I can build a support group around me of folks that are motivated to not only be successful, but to get fit to ensure that they're going to succeed.
I agree.
Now, when a person is getting started, I don't know if your book kind of helps us with some simple, okay, step one, step two, because the old saying about how do you eat an elephant, well, one bite at a time.
Each chapter at the end of it has simple steps. In fact, I got my book in front of me. Let me see what I call them at the end of the chapter. Let me see. Action steps. It's late here on the East Coast. I'm a little tired. Yeah, at the end of each chapter, I have action steps that really just boil down to five or six or seven or three or four concepts that we covered in the chapter. And I can't tell you, this book is written so simply. As simply as I speak, I'm not an orator. As simply as I speak.
Well, if you insist.
As simply as I speak is how this book reads. So we cover a section. You know, one section might be on overcoming failure, and really just give really simple steps. But the funny thing is the power is in the simplicity.
Ah.
If you read something that's simple, and if you take simple things and you implement them, it's like I discussed habits. I've got a chapter on habits, and really, if you look at it, if you just implemented three empowering habits in your life, three a year.
Okay.
At the end of 5 years, you've got 15 empowering habits. Do you think if you had 15 new empowering habits in your life that your life would be different?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. What if you did five a year?
Mm.
At the end of... And 5 a year is really simple. And I'm talking about an empowering habit. Very simple. Maybe doing some cardiovascular exercise 3 times a week. That's empowering.
Huh.
Maybe eating properly. That's another empowering habit. And eating properly is really simple. In the book, it's really boiled down to very, 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 very simple terms. Just very, very simple empowering habits, like maybe getting out of bed an hour earlier every day. That's three right there.
Sure. Now, can you give any examples on that area? Because, you have told us that you basically, and people that get into athletics, they understand about failing. And
yes.
It's something that you learn and you deal with it and you accept it because it's a part of life and it helps you to really succeed. most of the population out there gets so discouraged by it. Now, you mentioned in your book that you help people to overcome some of that, and I'm thinking for the people who may need some help to overcome the failure, if they take more than an hour to order your book, then they might go beating up on themselves, and we don't want to have that happen. So what are some of the simple steps that we can do when something doesn't go right or when we failed to be able to take that in stride?
Well, first thing is, failure is such a negative word. So I think the first thing is, number one, eliminate that word from your vocabulary. Well, you know, I forget the author of the book, but there's one thing that I memorized early on was, you know, failure will, you know, regardless of what happens in my life, failure will not overtake me. Another thing is, another quote from Tom Hopkins is the number of times I succeed is in direct proportion to the number of times I fail. Now, do you know when I when I memorized those quotes?
No.
I was 23.
Ah.
I just got married. I was 23 years old. I memorized those quotes because every time I failed, so-called, I repeated them to myself. Now, number one thing is find something empowering to replace your thought process. Now, every time I thought I failed, I would instantly repeat to myself, yes, but the number of times I fail is in direct proportion to the number of times I succeed. So I conditioned myself that if I was going to think something negative, I immediately came back with this thing that overcame it. Now, another thing is a lot of people worry. Now, when I start worrying, what I do is I immediately turn to the Word of God. And Job said, that I fear most comes upon me. So if I'm fearful, which is usually the root cause of worry, I just immediately bring to myself, well, I'm going to worry about this. This is what's going to happen to me. That what I fear most is going to come upon me. I don't want that coming upon me. Let me think about something positive. So that's one thing, just your thought processes. The next thing is having goals. Now, if you only have one goal in life, now, if your goal is to be president of the United States, and you're not going to become president of the United States, your whole life is shot. Have other goals, maybe intermediate goals.
Hmm.
Maybe one goal is help out for free around town. Second goal might be, getting into local politics, then Congress or Senate, and then you're working your way up. Most people, they have one thing that they're shooting for, and if they don't achieve it, they're shot. Now, my book, I got turned down by over 300. This is just an example of how I got this. Which this might be a good way for your audience to see how I overcame failure versus me just shooting out advice. I had a goal of writing a book. I wrote a book. Then I started finding out that I needed to write a book proposal. So I go online, download a book proposal, and I had to write a 120-page book proposal. So I write this book proposal. I send it off to a bunch of people. The people who respond back to me tell, oh, that's the wrong format. That's a format from 10 years ago. We use a different format.
Oh.
So I got the new format. Then I called Zig Ziglar. I know Zig Ziglar's personal assistant, Lori Majors. They introduced me to a literary agent. Literary agent loved my project. We got turned down by everybody. But then somebody was about to accept us. Matter of fact, we had five companies that were interested in publishing my book. This is a year and a half ago. And the reason I didn't mention the literary agent's name is because of the story I'm telling. The guy's a great guy. But what happened was he had turmoil come up in his life. He fell out of the sky. All of a sudden, I was left myself with no literary agent, five people that were possibly interested in my book, and I thought I was going under contract in 30 days, and all of a sudden, I don't have my literary agent. I don't know who these people are to call. I didn't know what to do. Did I get discouraged? Yeah, I was discouraged. What I did the next day, though, is I got on the phone and started calling people again. I called Ann Graham Lotz, who lives here in Raleigh. I know her. She's published several books. And then I called Zig Ziglar again. Everybody turned me down. So I started calling Mark Victor Hansen. And so he finally gives me the name of Rick Frischman in New York, who's my publicist today. Rick introduces me to probably 100 or 150 more literary agents who all turned me down. And that was discouraging. But I had my eye on the ball. I just kept focusing on what I was going to do. Rick finally goes, you know what? You got a great book. You've got a great concept. You've got all the tools to make this work. The only thing you're missing is you don't have enough celebrity yet. But how are you going to get the celebrity if you don't get out there? Call this publisher. Well, I finally called the publisher. The publisher caught my vision. So he signs me to a contract. Now my next goal, I have a publisher. My next goal is we had to finish writing the book because the book wasn't written properly. So we go through that whole process. Then I wanted Mark Victor Hansen to write the foreword to my book. Now, I'm in my office right now. In my office, I've got a corkboard, and I've got Oprah Winfrey on it, Larry King on it. I've got my beautiful wife on it, standing in a subdivision that we want to live in one day. I've got a cover of my book, and I've got the New York Times bestsellers list with my book in the number one spot on there. And Mark Victor Hansen's foreword. Now, I called Mark Victor Hansen for 8 months, hundreds of times, to do the foreword. Emailed it to him, everything. No response, because he travels so much. He wasn't being rude. He's just very busy.
Sure.
And he gets, he's asked by 500 people a day to do this. Finally, get his secretary on the line. She goes, if you get face-to-face with him, you don't seem like the type of person who will be denied, and he's real personable. You need to get in face-to-face with him. He'll be in New York in a few weeks. So I set up to go to New York. I go to New York, and I pre-wrote the foreword. I put it in every pocket of my suit, jeans, everywhere I was going to be. So if I saw him in the bathroom, I had it with me.
There you go.
So I was ready for him. I'm standing at the Book Expo America in New York, and here comes Mark Victor Hansen. Even though I spoke to him before, he didn't know what I looked like. He comes walking past me. He's got 300 people around him, and I said, you know what? I'm going to catch him when he's got a little more time later in the week. Today's bad timing. He walks past me and looks at me, and he goes, you know, it must take incredible discipline to look like you. And I said, well, Mr. Hansen, don't you agree that discipline, perseverance, and the ability to never give up on your dreams are the three most important things to a successful life? He goes, absolutely. I said, hi, I'm John Rowley. I'm the one who's sent you my foreword. Oh, I left one thing out. I sent my wife and I went out and built a silver platter. We mailed him my foreword on a silver platter. And then we took a second one and crumpled it up and got a red stamp and put on it, please don't throw me away again. I figured he'd laugh and sign it and send it back to me. My point to this is on my vision board, I've got a quarter vision board, I've got pictures of everything that I want in my life. Now, I wasn't just shooting for Mark. I'm also shooting for Oprah, Larry King, this place that we... I've got 7 or 8 things that I want to achieve. And I'm and you take them one bit at a time. But Mark, because I focused on it, and plus I think it was God's will for this to happen anyway, he started talking to me. He loved it. He's become a friend. I'm actually published under his label because he became partners with the publisher that I'm doing business with.
Yeah.
So my book is the first book to come out on the Mega Books label, which Mark Victor Hansen actually owns. And that happened after he signed my the foreword, by the way. So I think the key is keeping your eye on the ball and not letting all the discouragement. You know, every time I called him, I could have looked at that as a failure. Not looking at the failure, but keeping your eye on the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that answered your question.
this is amazing. I think this is so important for us to remember as we're coming here to last couple of minutes to wrap up, John. And I want to, of course, remind people to go visit you at your website, johnmrowley.com. And get this book. And I don't know. Do you do personal coaching? Any of that stuff?
We're starting to do some coaching. I go around and I speak to larger groups.
Okay.
And
so
things like that.
That a person can take care. You know, be availed of your services.
Absolutely.
To me, the reminder for all of us is that what we see that looks easy, you got this forward. And what we don't realize is that for most people that accomplished that, they had to have a passion and a tenacity and this attitude that says, I will absolutely persist on this until I achieve it. And at the same time, be willing to make sure they're taking care of biz, that they are putting food on the table, that they are being mindful, and then the key to being able to pull all of this off, if I'm hearing correctly, is for us to take some time, physical fitness, so that we have the strength to run the distance, go the distance from field of dreams.
Absolutely. Life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you respond to it. And if you're tired, I was over in Kazakhstan and China a couple of years ago with doing some missions work for my church. And I saw these people who were spiritual heroes of mine. But when they started getting physically tired, they fell apart. Mm-hmm. And I see the same thing in the business world. These guys who were heroes of mine, when I was a younger businessman in New York, all of a sudden, towards the later in the day, they start snapping at their secretaries, be unreasonable to be around, and not handle themselves professionally and appropriately, which did affect their career. So if you're not physically strong, you're not going to be mentally aware. You can't be.
Yeah, well, that's often when I recommend aromatherapy, which is a chloroform hanky.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, if they get too cranky, just here, breathe in.
Oh, that's great. I need to remember that. I've got some of my employees I might use that with.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's great.
Thank you. We've just spent what I consider blessed and happy time. John, I want to thank you so much for sharing your energy, your inspiration with me and our beloved listeners, and just to encourage everyone out there, go get his book and begin to implement. Take a little bit better care of yourself. We're going for the long run. Set little goals so you can have some success. And tune in every week to Advanced Living Radio, because I am so here and so devoted to making your lives better. So we're going to do it big time, each and every one of us, because we've been told we won't be lifted up until the least among us is lifted up. So no one's getting left behind. John, God bless you. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Ken, and thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to speak with you. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome.